I was wondering if you guys are hiring right now.
I was thinking about applying for a job.
Yeah, I was thinking about applying for a job here.
I'm currently facing 88 felonies.
I'm currently facing 88 felonies
for detention of classified information.
Do you all take people that have been found liable for sexual assault?
Trying to overturn the 2020 election.
Falsifying business records.
I was wondering if that was going to be a problem.
Check.
Yeah.
So that's the only.
So
probably not.
Yeah.
So do you guys hire people that sexually assault other people, or?
We want a full background.
Okay.
No, we don't.
I don't think so.
Okay.
Donald Trump has been charged with 88 felonies and found liable for sexual assault. If Trump is too big of a liability to get a job at your local mall, he is too big of a liability to be president of the United States.
Welcome to the Politocrat. I'm Omar Moore. It is Tuesday, April the 23rd, 2024. On this edition of the Politocrat, the corporate news media's fail in its coverage of the trial of the Orange Thug. I'll be talking about what the media needs to do better and where it is failing. Plus, I'll be talking about Reverend Cecil Williams, remembering him, the Reverend of the Glide Church in San Francisco has passed away. And I'll be also going into a little bit of sports talk as well. All of that coming up next. Welcome, dear listener. How are you on this Tuesday? Delighted to have you aboard. And look, it's been quite a month of April, hasn't it? And we still have, we have about exactly a week of April left before we move into May. Oh my goodness me. My gosh. We've had an eclipse this month. We've had an orange piece of garbage on trial. We've had contretemps between Israel and Iran. We've had the continuing genocide of Palestinians. We have free speech on college campuses now coming under fire. You know, it's just really ridiculous. And look, people who are on campus demonstrating their First Amendment rights to stand up in favor of the Palestinian people in Gaza should not be expelled or carted off or have police on campus. Don't people remember the Orangeburg 3? Don't people remember Kent State? Don't people remember any? I mean, we don't have a collective memory in this country. That's the problem. We forget all these things. We forget Kent State. We forget Orangeburg. We forget all of these things. And now you want to militarize the campuses again? Is that what you want to do? Dear, oh dear, oh dear. It's just such propaganda and nonsense. You're willing to trample First Amendment speech. I've been reading all over social media people who were at these protests, videos of these protests, nothing said to denigrate any particular group of people. So where is all this nonsense coming from? Are people infiltrating these protests? You know what I think the answer is to that question. I just think that this is disgraceful that you've got police coming on the campuses of places like Columbia University in New York City and other places trying to intimidate students who are utilizing their First Amendment rights in an academic setting, no less. It's absolutely ridiculous and it's insulting and it's got to stop. And that's my word, my opening word, my prelude for this episode, dear listener. I do hope you're well. Thank you very much indeed for joining me. You are a valued and well-respected listener to this podcast and I am grateful and thankful to you. So thank you very much. I do hope that your day is going swimmingly. This is Tuesday, as I've said, and I do want to start with after the prelude, with this note. Reverend Cecil Williams, now that name may not be one that you're familiar with if you're outside of San Francisco, maybe even if you're inside San Francisco, but I can tell you that we lost a very significant person here in San Francisco. Yesterday it was announced that the Reverend Cecil Williams, who is one of the founders of the Glide Church in San Francisco, a place that welcomed everybody, name it and claim it, has passed away, and passed away at the age of 94. Reverend Cecil Williams was a figure of such profundity, and he cared so much about people. He was a humanist to his core. He was an activist. He was a man that believed in liberation theology. He was a man who was on the front lines in the 1960s, and he believed in black liberation. He believed in people. He believed in a better world, and he believed in including everyone, and he did not believe in excluding anyone. He welcomed everyone to his Glide Church in San Francisco in the Tenderloin District, which is a district that is undergoing, in some cases, some changes, but in a lot of other cases, not much change at all. Glide was a quintessential symbol of love, open-heartedness, worship, and activism. Cecil Williams was one of those, along with his wife, along with Janice Murakami, who fed the hungry, fed the poor, fed the homeless. That's what Glide does now to this very day. And it also invites in people who have been rejected and despised by the society. Whether it was someone who was trans, whether it was someone who was of the LGBTQ community at large, whether it was whomever, Glide opened its doors and still does to everyone. And Reverend Cecil Williams was the man who embodied that, and was the man who took people in, people who had hardships, people whose lives were in real, real turmoil. And he helped turn them around. He helped transform them. And his compassion, his empathy are abiding. And they were abiding. And I am so profoundly sad about this loss for San Francisco and beyond, and it really is a huge loss. Reverend Cecil Williams, I got to meet him many years ago. I also did some volunteer work around Glide as well, full disclosure, years ago, because I believe in the very same things that he believes in and stood for, that he believed in and that he stood for. And so it is with a heavy heart and with great sadness that it's just very sad. I'll leave it like that. And if you are ever in San Francisco, please head to the Glide Church. By the way, on X, you can find them at Glide SF, G-L-I-D-E, S as in Sam, F as in Frank. I'll put a link to their X page. And their Twitter page. And you can see some of the things that they're doing. And they've got a website as well. In fact, I put a link to that, glide.org, glide.org. That's probably the better thing to do. I'll do that. Oh, dear, oh, dear. Very, very sad stuff. Very sad indeed. As rest in power, Reverend Cecil Williams. You were a shining example of what compassion, selflessness, decency, open-heartedness, sensitivity, love, activism, and welcoming people with open arms was all about. My deepest condolences to the family of Reverend Cecil Williams.
Trump takes the stand, as he's claimed that he will. In another Manhattan courtroom today, the question is whether the insurer that provided Donald Trump a $175 million bond in his New York civil fraud case has the financial strength to issue the guarantee. Now, if the judge rules against him, Mr. Trump will have 10 days to come up with the cash. Also, for the first time today in the Florida classified documents case, witness statements that had been redacted are being made public. And then, back in New York tomorrow, Judge Mershon will hold a hearing about Trump's gag order. Did he violate it? And if so, what could be the consequences? And as if all that isn't enough, on Thursday, the Supreme Court will hear oral arguments on his claims of presidential immunity, even as he is back in the New York courtroom. I think to say this is a consequential week for him personally and politically is an understatement.
Absolutely. I mean, all of those cases, and he's facing a lot right now. And of course, this is, as we say, an historic moment. The court session that will end earlier today because of the Passover holiday, but we also learned today that an alternate juror has a toothache, and that needs to be attended to, so they're ending even a little bit earlier than they would have otherwise because she has to get to the dentist. Life goes on.
Yes, life goes on. That's right, Andrea Mitchell. Life goes on, and the corporate news media's terrible coverage of this Orange Thug's trial goes on, and that's bad news as well, you know? Oh, all the sympathy for this piece of garbage. Oh, and if that isn't enough, there's another trial, and there's another trial. Well, he brought it on himself. Why the sympathy? Oh, it's going to be a big, consequential, personal and professional and political week for him. Oh, my goodness me. Oh, he's facing a lot right now. I mean, this is not the kind of thing that journalists who call themselves such should be even saying on the air. I'm sorry, it just should not be that kind of thing. And I contend, and I've said this for a long time now, that the corporate news media in the United States has done a profound disservice to its viewership and a profound disservice to the profession of journalism and reporting. There's no way around it. And that's why you have to seek out different media, because the corporate news media is all about entertainment and ratings and clicks and retweets and reposts and advertising dollars. That's what it is. And what I'm telling you is that the kinds of things that you're hearing on these networks about, oh, this is a tough week for him, oh, he's facing a lot right now, you know, this is all of his own making. It's all of his own making. And I really wish that these corporate news networks and some of the people on them stop being so empathetic to a criminal. I get that he was part of NBC when he had that wretched show that he had. I get that he was part of the media ecosystem for many decades. I get that the corporate news media can't get enough of kissing his orange ass. But enough is enough. It's bad enough you gave him over $2 billion of free advertising in 2015 and 16. Where you put his empty podium up there for the world to see with his text message number on there and all that, his text number. It's bad enough. Haven't you had enough yet of this fascist, this clown? Haven't you had enough? Haven't you had enough of lionizing the Republican Fascist Party, the RFP? Haven't you had enough of fetishizing the RFP? You invite them on your network. You invite members of that cult on your network on Sunday shows, and you have them as contributors and all the rest of it. They host show. Haven't you had enough? That's your corporate news media in the United States. It's junkyard theater. That's what I call it. And then you've got Andrea Mitchell trivializing an alternate juror's toothache. And then mentioning the gender of the alternate juror. I thought we were supposed to be keeping all that stuff quiet now. Yeah, I'm not happy about the way that the corporate news media is behaving, and I haven't been for a long time. You know that. I'm certainly not the only one. And then you wonder why a lot of people don't even trust you. They don't even watch you, and they barely want to smell you because you stink of journalistic malpractice. You have to do better. And I'm not saying that every single person in the corporate news media is unprofessional, because you and I know that that is not the case. But what I am saying is that when you come on the air, you have a heightened responsibility to your viewership to present news and information and to call out lies and to make very clear what the facts are and to call out lies. Let me say that for a third time. Call out the lies and stop airing them and make sure you fact check aggressively. Those are the things you have to do. Do your journalistic due diligence and stop trying to equivocate and balance things out as, oh, it's both sides. Stop that nonsense. It doesn't help anyone. When I come back, I'm going to talk about one other thing that the corporate news media needs to do. Dear listener, the corporate news media is the focus just for this second segment as well. I talked about the corporate news media, the way it is covering this orange thug, and the problem that I have as well with what they're doing is that in this particular trial, under New York law, no cameras are allowed in the courtroom. Thereby, there cannot be any live televised coverage inside the courtroom of the trial. So what we as the general public are relying on are the eyes and ears and the statements of the press who are assembled inside that courtroom or inside an overflow room in that courthouse on the 15th floor of that courthouse. And so those journalists and reporters in that courtroom are really the only line of defense. They are the only word, aside from us being in the very courtroom ourselves. And since millions and millions and millions of us can't fit into that courtroom, we are relying expressly on those journalists. And so therefore, it is incumbent upon those journalists to provide the information as to what is happening in that courtroom. And it is also incumbent upon the anchor person to engage in speaking about the issues around the trial. And yes, there's a pundit class of attorneys and legal analysts who do that. But the ambit, the context in which all of that conversation is happening and all that news coverage is happening is a sensationalist one. It is packaged in the atmosphere of sensationalism and titillation, not in an atmosphere of seriousness in terms of the actual issues and the culture and the country. It's all about personality. Oh, how must he be feeling? Oh, he's facing a lot here. Oh my goodness, how does this look for his campaign? That is not something I give a damn about, and I'm not so sure that you do either, dear listener. I don't think you care about how it looks for the campaign. This is about how it looks for the country. And really, the most important thing is, can this country hold power to account? That for me, dear listener, is what this is all about. In fact, I'll go even more succinct than that. Will this country ever hold a white male who is supposedly affluent accountable in a criminal trial? That is really what this is about. And that is the frame around which The corporate news media in the United States should be dealing with this particular trial. And this orange thug, let's not forget this, has three other criminal trials or proceedings that he has to be dealing with. And a lot of the kibitzing, if you will, in the media is, well, which case is weaker, which case is stronger? Dude, this orange thug has four cases against him. Four. And you got people on the corporate news media talking to you about, well, this one's not as strong. This one's a really weak case. Bloody hell, he's got four of these criminal cases. It doesn't matter whether one's supposedly weaker or stronger. See, that's the frame that is being put around this, and it's the wrong blooming frame. It's that this piece of garbage has four of these blooming things. Four of them. Not one, but four. And again, the corporate news media misses the point deliberately, in my view, and doesn't really get to the heart of the matter. And it's all horse race sensationalism, breathlessness, laughing and sitting around the table. And instead of having the serious conversations, and occasionally there are one or two who come on and talk about those very important things, talking about autocracy and authoritarianism, like Professor Ruth Ben-Ghiat, who I've had as a guest on a couple of occasions on this very podcast, like the Professor Tim Snyder, who has talked about this, and a few others. That will be every now and again. But we need to have much more conversation like that and other conversation about this country and how it has been always crafted post-Native American control. And crafted, I should say, in the image and by rich white men. And founded upon the brutalization of Native Americans and founded on the backs of black people, black folk, enslaved black people. And you see, this is the thing. And then when you hear nonsense, as I've heard many times over the last few days about, well, if this wasn't the orange, well, I'm saying it, if this wasn't the orange thug, would someone else be treated like this, or would they be treated differently? And then you got the person responding to that by hemming and hawing. Well, you can't make comparisons. Heard that today. You can make comparisons. It's very clear that if I was the one who was in this situation, I wouldn't even have got this far. I would be in prison. I would not be running for president. I can't anyway. I wasn't born in the United States. But you get the idea. If this is Joe Schmo off the street, if this is Shawanda off the street, if this is Joanna off the street, if this is Maisie off the street, if this is Pedro off the street, we are in prison right now. We're not getting second and third and fourth and fifth chances. We're not getting to have gag orders that are being reserved on judgment for. Oh, well, I'll reserve judgment on this. When we violated the gag order 10, 15, 20 times during breaks, continuing to violate them after the gag order hearing. And prosecutors wouldn't be recommending us to be fined. They'd be recommending you and I to be thrown in the damn slammer. After 10 of these things, after 15 violations, they would order us in contempt and held in a jail cell. The corporate news media has the wrong kind of discussion, and they do so deliberately. They don't have the discussion that we need to have a conversation around. And as I said, this is all about, will this country ever hold a white male, a very powerful white male, accountable for his criminality? He has a track record of it. You heard in detail. In fact, no. I'm going to play you a few things right now from this piece of orange garbage. And I want the corporate news media, and they're not going to do this, to actually do what I'm about to do here.
And if it is Russia, which is probably not, nobody knows who it is, but if it is Russia, it's really bad for a different reason, because it shows how little respect they have for our country when they would hack into a major party and get everything. But it would be interesting to see. I will tell you this. Russia, if you're listening, I hope you're able to find the 30,000 emails that are missing. I think you will probably be rewarded mightily by our press. Let's see if that happens. That'll be next. Yes, sir.
Look, all I want to do is this. I just want to find 11,780 votes, which is one more that we have, because we won the state, and flipping the state is a great testament to our country, because, you know, and there's just it's a testament that they can admit to a mistake, or whatever you want to call it, if it was a mistake, I don't know.
And those are the clips that you don't hear in the corporate news media anymore. You do not hear those. Two clips, I thought it might have been more than that. I'm sure they could find a treasure trove of them if I looked, dear listener. But the first one you heard there was the infamous Russia, if you're listening, clip. That was during a press conference that this orange piece of garbage had in the summer of 2016 when he was running for the White House for the first time. And then the second piece of audio you heard was when he was an occupant of the White House. And this would have been on January the 2nd of 2021, when he was speaking to the Secretary of State for the state of Georgia, Brad Raffensperger, a Republican, asking him to find him 11,780 votes. Now, what you may have also heard in that particular audio was him saying, find me 11,780 votes because we won the election. Well, if you won the election in the state, you orange fool, why would you be asking the Secretary of State of Georgia to find you 11,780 votes? Do you see the double, or do you hear the double talk, the double speak in that particular thing I've just said that that orange thug is doing? He does a lot of that kind of double talking, double speaking kind of thing. Put two contradictory things or two contrary things in the same sentence. How in the hell could you have won a state if you were asking someone to quote unquote find you 11,780 votes? It's ridiculous. That's the criminality, and that's something that he is in trouble for in Georgia. And of course, that's a case that's a state case. And Lord knows when that will ever come to trial. That's one of the four cases he has. I think all of them are criminal. There might be one of the four that's civil, but I think all four of them are criminal cases. There's the one criminal case ongoing right now around these falsifying of business records. And I really would hope, and they're not going to do this. The corporate news media has to stop calling this a hush money case. It's not a hush money case. It's about falsifying business records, dear listener, in order to cover up the crime of election fraud. That's what it is. And the election fraud is not disclosing to the public that there was an affair had with a person not your wife, and knowing that that person not your wife was a porn star, and knowing that in this country there are certain segments of the society who are very much in disfavor when it comes to their view of pornography and porn stars. And you know well that those persons might have been the ones who would have probably voted against you had they learned this information. So you attempted to deceive the public by falsifying business records that actually showed that you had paid off porn star Stormy Daniels, that you had an affair with, but you claimed that you didn't. Paid off Cara McDougal, a Playboy bunny, ex-Playboy bunny now, that you had an affair with, but you say you didn't. Cara McDougal has gone on TV, talked to Anderson Cooper, said everything about the 10-month affair that they had, went into detail when asked. Stormy Daniels has done the same. And you just didn't want the public to know this, so you falsify these business records that involve payments to the likes of Stormy Daniels. And Stormy Daniels has every right to do the pornography, whatever she chooses to do, that's her business. I'm not judging her. More power to her. More power to any woman who is in that industry. I mean, it's an industry that I think is very harsh against women, extremely harsh, to say the least. It's violent against women. You know, I've got no issue with women doing that. My personal view is that it's a very harsh industry at large. There's always maybe one or two exceptions, but generally speaking, that's my view of it. I believe in the autonomy of women. I believe in that strongly. I really do. I will champion that till the cows come home. But what this is really about, dear listener, is a corporate news media that's not doing its job. Not doing its job. And by the way, there is a pattern in those audio pieces I played you. This is a pattern of criminality, of someone who's asking for an institution to break its particular protocol in order to accommodate his own selfish whims, his own narcissist whims, his own malignancy, his own criminality, his own degeneracy. Can you find me 11,780 votes? Russia, if you're listening, I hope you can find the 30,000 emails. Oh, President Zelensky of Ukraine. And this is something the news media in this country doesn't talk about anymore. I need you to set up a meeting with CNN, have a press conference to announce that you are doing an investigation of Vice President Biden's son based around some corruption that didn't happen. And if you do that, we will send aid to your country. That's another thing that this piece of garbage did. That's what he was impeached for the first time around. Now, dear listener, a lot of people don't even remember that. Did you remember that? That in 2019, this piece of orange garbage was impeached for abusing his power? Now, look, I was on social media yesterday and I said that this is kind of like a election fraud type of case. But I should correct that. It's not exactly the same as the case that he's on trial for right now. But it certainly has some relationship because in both situations, this piece of garbage is putting his thumb on the scale or asking someone else to do so in service of him. Now, he was in the White House when he spoke to Zelensky. Had this telephone call with Zelensky. Pressured Zelensky, just like he had the telephone call with the Secretary of State of Georgia, Brad Raffensperger. Tried to pressure Brad Raffensperger. And by the way, he's no saint. either. There is an MO here and there's a pattern. And if the corporate news media cared enough to do its damn job properly, and it doesn't, they would be mentioning all of these things as a nexus to what's going on in that courtroom right now. Give the viewers greater context into what this piece of orange garbage is doing. And you as an institution are failing. You talk about institutions. Institutions don't magically do their thing. It's the people who have to do that within those institutions. And it's us who have to hold them to account, whether it's you in the media or whether it's us as voters. Because one thing you can say, and I don't care what anyone says in the media about polls, we will come out and vote this November with such a fury that this country won't know what has hit it. Because we're going to vote these Republicans out of office, every last one of them, as much as we can. They are not doing anything for us. They are taking our rights away. And then there's a media that's sycophantic to them. The corporate news media. Absolute lapdogs and stenographers now. That's what you got. No more investigative journalism. You can find it in some good places. I can go to ProPublica. I can go to Roland Martin Unfiltered and the great work he's doing. I can go to Jane Mayer of The New Yorker. There's excellent investigative journalism. And there's several others. There's Democracy Now. I can talk about them. Reuters, and they are corporate, actually does some good journalism in that way. Also, Associated Press, they're independent. They do excellent investigative journalism. Pages and pages and pages of it there. You have to hold these people to account. You have to hold power to account. That's my overarching theme here, dear listener, is that that is the test and the key. If we want a country that is going to move forward, then people in power, like this piece of orange crap, have to be held to account when they commit crimes. I know he's accused, but look, he has had a long trail of this for 40 to 50 years. 50 years going back to the 1970s when he refused to rent his properties to black people and was fined for it. He was actually fined. The courts fined him. Federal government brought the case against him. He was discriminatory against black folk. And these black people out here who are thinking about voting for him, you are out of your minds. You are out of your right mind. How about doing some reading and studying about what this orange freak does and how much of a racist windbag he is? We have to hold people like this to account. And the problem is that 50 years ago when Gerald Ford, as president, decided to pardon Richard Nixon for any and all future crimes. Yeah. True story. You then bring about the criminality that you have now.
Well, when the president does it, that means that it is not illegal.
By definition.
Exactly.
And so you get someone like a Richard Nixon just 3 years after he was pardoned by Gerald Ford saying some arrogant crap like that to David Frost. In 1977. How about that? That is where this all snowballs to. And then you get arrogant presidents like George W. Bush, who then goes to war in Iraq illegally. But look, this predated Nixon and Bush. Don't get me wrong. This country had been illegally invading other countries way before either Nixon or, quite frankly, George W. But the point I'm trying to make here is that this is the issue of accountability. Accountability for power. Who is going to bring and hold power to account in this country? That is the frame. That is the frame that the corporate news media is and is not doing, but should be doing. And it won't do it, because then it implicates them as well. Because when you enable this orange garbage, when you give this orange garbage $2 billion or so, according to CBS Market Watch, free advertising, that much money in free advertising in 2015 and 16, when you do all that, when you show his empty podium, as all these networks did, when Hillary Clinton had a rally and the empty podium of that orange garbage was there, they had the split screen, but it wasn't even a split screen. It was a giant shot of an empty podium and a small mini screen, picture-in-picture screen in the bottom right-hand corner of Hillary Clinton at her rally. They didn't switch, in a lot of cases, from the empty podium to the Clinton rally. They kept the Clinton rally in the tiny box in the bottom right-hand corner of the screen while keeping the big empty podium with the orange turd's text number front and center on that bigger screen. And that's where the problem is, dear listener. That's where the problem is. So all of that is to say, focus on more responsible media, independent media. I've talked about them earlier, Reuters, etc. Reuters and Associated Press, Roland Martin's Black Star Network, Roland Martin Unfiltered, youtube.com/Roland S. Martin. Right? Focus on Democracy Now. These are journalistic endeavors and companies and publications and people who do the right thing and give you good news, really good news. And I'm not saying good news, ha-ha, but comprehensive news and news analysis without all the punditry. And there's so many other organizations, but those are some of the ones and some of the people that spring to mind for me. And please, dear listener, make sure that you vote. Please, please vote in every election. Hold power to account. We can do that with our vote. The corporate news media must do it, but it won't. So we have to do it, and we have to go to news sources who will do it. And those people are out here. I'll be right back.
Good day, everyone. I'm Andrea Mitchell in Washington. At the hush money trial in New York today, Judge Juan Merchan coming down on Donald Trump's defense attorney, Todd Blanche, during this morning's contempt hearing, not with the jury present, of course. The court walking point by point through Mr. Trump's 10 alleged violations, according to the prosecutor, of the gag order, restricting what the former president can say about witnesses and jurors. But just last night, here's Donald Trump weighing in on the jury on conservative talk radio.
Nobody's ever seen a thing go like this. That jury was picked so fast. 95% Democrats. The area is mostly all Democrat. You think of it as just a purely Democrat area. It's a very unfair situation, that I can tell you.
Prosecutors telling the judge, quote, Trump knows what he's not allowed to do and he does it anyway, calling Mr. Trump's disobedience intentional. The defense firing back, saying, quote, there was absolutely no willful violation of the gag order, insisting that Mr. Trump was responding politically. The judge continuously pressing defense lawyer Blanche for specific details, telling him, quote, you're losing all credibility with the court.
So there he is still violating gag orders, and there is the corporate news media not talking about the fact that this piece of orange garbage is making everything political in terms of his own criminality. And what he's doing is attaching politics to his own criminality and everything emanating from it. But no one in the corporate news media is going to do their job and say to you, this is something that he's doing, that this is a strategy of his to politicize every single thing about his own criminality. Now, there may be one or two pundits that might have said something, but I'm telling you, that's the thing. These things just get played, and the audio gets played, and there's no pushback. And that's the worst thing about all this. So I just wanted to play that. And you heard, obviously, the voice of Andrea Mitchell there as well. But it's just, again, this is just another example of a corporate news media that doesn't do its job and has stopped doing its job. Judge Michonne did not discipline this orange thug. Gag order after gag order violation. And, oh, I'm going to reserve judgment on it. I'm going to reserve ruling on it. And he's violated this gag order so long, so many times. And again, that is an institution not doing its job. That is an undermining of an institution when a person in it does not do their job. It's just, again, it's absolutely ridiculous. What is the point of you being in your position if you're not going to lay down the law, Judge Michonne? What's the point?
I need to open up a company for the transfer of all of that info regarding our friend David. You know, so that I'm going to do that right away. I've actually come up and I've spoken to Alan Weisselberg about how to set the whole thing up with.
So what are we going to
pay? Funding. That, yes, and it's all the stuff. All the stuff, because you know you never know where that company, you never know where he's going to be.
Gets it, but
correct. So I'm all over that, and I spoke to Alan about it when it comes time for the financing, which will be.
Listen, what financing?
We'll have to.
Hey, so. No. I got it. Oh, knocked loose, and Maxi gets knocked down. Hart takes it away. Out top to DiVincenzo. His shot won't go. Hartenstein the rebound. Hartenstein gets it out to Ananobi. DiVincenzo a three. Bang! Bang! Knicks take a 1-point lead.
Nuggets, 12 seconds remaining. They're not going to call timeout. 9 seconds remaining. Murray's got to go. Murray. Let's it fly.
Yeah!
Oh, my God!
Ha!
Oh, my gosh.
Oh, my gosh, indeed. Oh, yes. You heard just this few moments ago, two clips from the NBA. That's what you just heard. The NBA playoffs last night. What dramatic games those were. And I know that this is not ordinarily a sports podcast, but there are times, dear listener, that I do talk a bit about sports on here. So if you indulge me just for a few moments, I want to just talk about what you just heard. The first audio clip was the New York Knicks at home against the Philadelphia 76ers. Of course, I am a big fan of the New York Knicks. And the Knicks at Madison Square Garden last night, defeating the Philadelphia 76ers in dramatic style in Game 2 of the first round of the NBA playoffs in the Eastern Conference, with a 104-101 win over the Sixers, who didn't make life easy last night for the Knicks. The Knicks scored 8 points in the final 25 seconds or so to win the game. It was a dramatic contest, reminiscent of a contest that I saw at Madison Square Garden as a Knicks season ticket holder almost 30 years ago. But I don't even want to talk about that one, because that was the one we lost. Had a 6-point lead with 18 or so seconds left, and we lost to the Pacers and Reggie Miller in that game. They ended up losing the series. But this game last night, flash forward almost 30 years, and it was one of the most exciting games you'll ever see in a playoff game context. Tremendous stuff. Exciting. 2 3-pointers at the end, one of which you heard. And then 2 3-throws, which you didn't hear also. 2 3-throws to give the Knicks the final score of 104-101. And then the second clip you heard was from the Denver Nuggets against the Los Angeles Lakers, Game 2 of the first round of the Western Conference playoffs. And I have to say, that one was dramatic as well. The Lakers had a 20-point lead in the second half of their game against the Denver Nuggets. They led by 20 points. It might even have been 22 points, but I think it's 20 points at Denver. The LA Lakers, LeBron James and company, had a big lead in that game. In the third quarter, it was up. They were up by 20. And I had asked, do you think the Lakers will win the game? And most people said, yes. So who do you think is going to win? And most people said the Lakers. But what you just heard was the winning shot by the Denver Nuggets player, Jamal Murray. I mean, unbelievable stuff. At the buzzer, his shot went through the hoop for the winning score. It was 99-99 at the time, but with literally about, what, a second to go in the game. Actually, the buzzer, he took the shot with a second left, and the buzzer sounded, and the ball went through the hoop just after the buzzer sounded. That was just unbelievable stuff. A truly dramatic finish in that game, but both of these games had extraordinary drama in the final seconds. Both of them were dramatic. I don't know which one was more dramatic, the one with the Knicks coming from five down with 25 or so seconds left, or the one with Jamal Murray hitting the shot as the buzzer expired. In that game, if Murray had missed that shot, they would have gone to overtime. So I would leave it that way. And as a Knicks fan, of course, I've got some bias in this. But the fact that the Knicks did have to come from 5 points down with literally, 30-odd seconds or so to go, 40 seconds to go, I think makes the Knicks win much more dramatic because of the fact that they were down by so much. The Denver Nuggets were tied at the time they made the shot there with Jamal Murray. But this was a dramatic finish all the same. But the Knicks game, even more drama there. So I just wanted to talk about that for a few moments to lighten things up here at the end of this edition of the Politocrat Daily Podcast. By the way, I'm going to play you some more audio now, but it does go back to what I've been previously talking about. But there will be a celebrity talking, and I will warn you in advance that you might find some of the language foul and salty. It does contain some foul language, but I do want you to listen to it. You may have heard this audio before. I won't tell you who it is, but you will know exactly who it is once you hear the audio that's coming up in a moment. I wish the corporate news media would actually say what this particular celebrity gets to say in this clip from several years ago, back in 2019, in fact. So anyway, I will play that in a moment. You can find me on X at the Popcorn R-E-E-L and on fanbase app.com. That's fanbaseapp.com/popcorn R-E-E-L. This podcast is on Apple and Spotify and Google and other podcasting platforms as well. And of course, don't forget to subscribe to the YouTube channel, youtube.com/@ThePolitocrat, P-O-D. Thank you very much for listening to this edition of The Politocrat. I'm Omar Moore.
This guy should not be president, period.
And when you say that, folks on Fox come after you. I remember the Tonys when he got up there and cursed. A lot of criticism of you.
Fuck him.
Okay, well, you know, this is cable, so it's not an FCC violation. Sorry. But it is still a Sunday morning.
Well,
I do wonder why you choose to go that way.
Let me say something.
Why do you choose to go that way?
We are at a moment in our life, in this country, where this guy is like a gangster. He's come along and he's said things, done things we say over and over again. This is terrible. We're in a terrible situation. We're in a terrible situation. And this guy just keeps going on and on and on without being stopped.
Let's fit in a break. Let's squeeze in a commercial. More with Robert De Niro in just a moment.